You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Good evening, everybody. Instead of an interview today, we're going to play a speech given by Cliff Kincaid at the Americans for Truth Academy in 2010 called The Battle Over Blood, Gay Health Risks and Public Policy. Cliff is a director of America Survival. He also writes for Accuracy in Media. There's a lot of news these days with the Democrats again pushing to end the FDA ban on homosexual men giving blood. And so we thought this was relevant. Again, a speech by Cliff Kincaid at the Americans for Truth Academy. We'll have information on ordering tapes from the Truth Academy at the end of this segment.
So, we're going to talk about the battle over the blood supply in the context of the gays in the military debate, an area that we've been involved in through my group, my nonprofit group, America's Survival. And of course, I'm going to go over some background that I'm sure you already know, but it has to be reemphasized that the reason we're talking about these issues today is because of President Obama's campaign promise during 2008 to repeal, as he put it, the law that denies gay Americans the right to serve the country they love because of who they are. And of course, the question that we're asking, and we got a little taste of the answer last night, didn't we? Who are these people? Who are they? Peter LaBarbera has, of course, led the way in actually going to places like San Francisco and the gay pride parades, so-called, and taking pictures of who these people really are. And needless to say, we're not going to have to go into any detail or graphic descriptions of who they are and what they do at this time, except insofar as it affects the blood supply. But you may remember also that President Clinton had tried to change the policy when he came into office. The Congress intervened and produced a policy that came to be known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which still prohibited active and open homosexuals from serving in the military. Now, the pressure on Obama since he's come into office has been really intense. This is one of several photos that I took personally of demonstrations that have been happening quite regularly across from the White House. As you could see, that's the White House in the background there, of the radical gay and so-called self-described queer activists in Lafayette Park, where they've been demanding that he fulfill his promise, not later, now, immediately. We produced a report, which is available at our website, usasurvival.org, a 60-page report that goes into the dangers of changing this policy. This report was written by Dale O'Leary, a well-known author and researcher who has been writing about the AIDS epidemic since it began. And I encourage you to go and get a copy of this. All of these reports we produce are free. They're all available at our website. It is a lengthy report, but it's heavily footnoted and just something you have to read. No other group, if I can pat myself on the back, has produced a report like this, analyzing the issue in this way. And in the report, she analyzes the problems with repealing the policy in terms of how would a repeal actually be implemented? How are you going to deal with these self-described members of the LGBT community and other persons other persons with so-called gender identity problems and disorders. Now, she goes into, and this is where it gets graphic, a lot of the facts, the statistics, and these are official statistics, about what homosexuals do, especially we're talking about the gay males. Men who have sex with men are at high risk for contracting HIV/AIDS and other STDs. Cruising bathhouses, circuit parties, internet hookups, prostitution, pornography, tea room sex are all defended, openly defended by gay men as essential to their identity, to their sexual identity. So this is not just a fringe activity that some of them engage in. This is deemed central to what they do and how they perceive themselves. Now, supporters of Obama's proposed repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell note that applicants for the U.S. military service are tested for HIV at enlistment and periodically retested afterwards. They say HIV-positive applicants are excluded from service, and military members testing HIV-positive after enlistment may not serve overseas. But the facts, as we've pointed out in this report, are that the tests are not 100% accurate, the HIV tests. The blood screening tests may not pick up all the deadly diseases, including HIV. And there are huge costs associated with the soldiers confirmed as HIV positive, this is after they've enlisted, who nevertheless are retained in the service. And it's true, they're right, these HIV positive soldiers are not deployed overseas, they are kept in the United States. But what are the dangers of that? What does that mean? Here's the incredible statistic. And I think our report was the first to document this based on Veterans Administration figures. These are official figures. We've got 19,000 soldiers or veterans right now HIV positive or with full-blown AIDS. 19,000. And she points out, Dale O'Leary, Dale is a woman, that opening the services to gay males would most certainly increase this number based on their own lifestyle. Since men who have sex with men are 46 to 86 times more likely to be newly infected with HIV. And here's an incredible fact. We don't think about it. The VA today is the biggest single provider of HIV care in the nation. Think about that. The Veterans Administration. And this includes outpatient, inpatient care, pharmacy, mental health services, substance abuse, long-term care, homeless care, and hospice services. Now, let me make the point that there are not reliable figures that have been provided to us about the breakdown of the 19,000. In other words, we don't know how many of them got HIV/AIDS through gay sex, how many of them may have gotten it through IV drug use, intravenous drug use, or perhaps blood transfusions. In the military, we just don't know. We know the figure is 19,000, and we know how dangerous and horrible HIV/AIDS is. But we know the cost is $18,000 to $20,000 a year to take care of each soldier or each veteran. Now, here's a case that I would guess probably nobody in this room has heard of. It's an incredible story that happened several years ago. Private First Class Johnny Lamar Dalton, a member of the 82nd Airborne Division, pled guilty during a court-martial to knowingly infecting a 17-year-old boy with HIV. He was sentenced to only 40 months in prison.
What was his name?
Johnny Lamar Dalton. Now, this was an HIV-infected soldier who was still a soldier. In other words, he had come down or been identified as having the disease after he enlisted. Dalton joined the Army 3 years ago and learned he was infected with HIV in June 2006. His illness barred him from deploying, but he was able to stay in the Army. The mother of the unidentified boy said her son first met Dalton in a gay online chat room. Here's another case. Well, but see, this is the thing about the confusing nature of the policy. Even if they come down with HIV AIDS after they're in, and it's clear in this case that it was that he spread AIDS, he undoubtedly got AIDS through gay sex, the policy is to keep them in the military. And this is, you can understand it on one grounds, that of compassion. Here's a fellow who's come down with this horrible disease that probably means eventual or ultimate death. And so they keep him in the service in order to give him this medical care through the VA system, which costs, as you saw, upwards of $18,000 or more a year. But of course, here's a concrete case of how this policy backfires, because you've got the soldier with HIV/AIDS, who's still in the Army, and he's going on online chat rooms and hooks up with a kid and infects the kid. But of course, here's a concrete case of how this policy backfires, because you've got the soldier with HIV/AIDS, who's still in the Army, and he's going on online chat rooms and hooks up with a kid and infects the kid. Now, here's another case, an HIV-positive Catholic Navy chaplain, Lieutenant Commander John Thomas Matthew. He's under the coat there. Was sentenced to prison for sexual misconduct with several men, including an enlisted Marine, an Air Force officer, and two Naval Academy midshipmen. Now, another point I should make about the Johnny Lamar Dalton case, though, of course, now he's in prison. But, you know, was 40 months enough for that crime? In this case, the Navy chaplain, 2 years. 2 years in prison. And here's from militarycorruption.com, a website I suggest you go to occasionally, run by a friend of mine named Major Glenn McDonald. He covers a lot of the things in the military that the Pentagon doesn't want to see revealed. Investigators were sickened by what they found, not just a huge amount of gay pornography on the chaplain's computer, but photographs of the naval officer standing nude in front of a crucifix in his office at Bancroft Hall in Annapolis. So the conclusion, there's already a significant homosexual problem in the U.S. military, even under, quote, don't ask, don't tell. And the military have not done enough to clean up the problem. And I can only add, as if you need any more convincing, that the Bradley Manning case I talked about yesterday is more proof of that. Here was a soldier who was openly flaunting his homosexuality, probably for more than a year. They allowed him to stay in, despite the law, and now he stands accused of leaking all this classified information in order to get back at the United States, to get back at the U.S. Army, and undermining our foreign policy in the process, and himself facing more than 50 years in prison. And our point is that we need to focus on protecting our soldiers. That should be our emphasis during this controversy over don't ask, don't tell. And that's where the blood supply comes in, because there is a real problem, if you look at the literature, of tainted blood on the battlefield. In some cases, soldiers are called upon to get blood transfusions, to get blood products, or called upon in other cases or instances to provide the blood. Here is the current FDA policy on what they call men who have sex with men, MSM, or gay males, active gay males. Men who have had sex with other men at any time since 1977 are deferred as blood donors because they're at high risk, increased risk for HIV, hepatitis B, and other infections. Now, how this works in practice, if you've given blood, you know that they give you a long form of questions. And one of the questions is, something to the effect of, have you had sex with another man even once since 1977? 77 is supposed to mark the diagnosis of the first AIDS case. That's why that date was chosen. And I don't think I have to tell you about the serious nature of this disease. It really is just terrible. We've done some analysis of the spending that's been done on AIDS. Now, I've given you some figures about the spending in the military per AIDS patient, 18,000 or more. Overall, since the discovery or announced discovery of the HIV virus, the federal government has spent $200 billion on HIV/AIDS. Needless to say, no cure, no vaccine has been found. They have developed some anti-AIDS drugs known as the retrovirals. But there are increasing doubts about their effectiveness and whether they could give rise to mutated forms of the disease. Again, this is another picture that I took outside the White House of these demonstrations that have been occurring with some regularity of the gay rights activists. And, you know, and it bears repeating because I've been covering this. I've been to the demonstrations. I've been to the hearings. It's all about them. It's all about their rights. Their rights. And the basic question that we've posed, and you'll see it in our report by Dale O'Leary and subsequent reports, is in terms of common sense, how can you allow gay males to become active and open members of the armed forces and repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell if they cannot legally donate blood? Isn't that a potential contradiction here? At one of these demonstrations, this was April 2nd, 2010, Howard Dean, the former Democratic Party chairman, showed up. And he was, you know, rah-rah for gay rights. Yeah, we got to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And then this is, of course, a picture that I took of his speech. And our position is simple. Despite other talk about gay rights, this is a special interest group. And we don't believe, as a matter of public policy, you should put the interests of a special interest group above the health and safety of our soldiers or the American people. Now, this is very interesting. I had a chance to interview Howard Dean at this demonstration. This is just a snippet of the interview. And I talked to him about the ban on gay males donating blood. I said, are you in favor of lifting that ban? Here's what he said. It's certainly possible to do it because of the screening techniques that exist. But before I give you an opinion on that, and let me keep in mind, Howard Dean is a medical doctor. Dr. Howard Dean. But before I give you an opinion on that, he says, I'd want to go back and look at the literature. I'm not going to say yes or no right now. I haven't looked at the health literature for 5 or 6 years. Well, I give him at least some credit for honesty on that score, that he's willing to say, well, let me go back and look at it. But at the same time, he starts out by saying it's certainly possible to do it. Now, what is the, as if to reemphasize the point, Dean is wrong. Dean is wrong. This is from the FDA's website. Blood donor testing using current advanced technologies has greatly reduced the risk, but cannot yet detect all infected donors or prevent all transmission by transfusions. While today's highly sensitive tests fail to detect less than one in a million HIV-infected donors, it is important to remember that in the U.S. there are over 20 million transfusions of blood, red cell concentrates, plasma, or platelets every year. Therefore, now this isn't me, this isn't Dale O'Leary, this is the FDA. Even a failure rate of one in a million can be significant if there is an increased risk of undetected HIV in the blood donor population. Nevertheless, what we have seen this year, and we have been through America Survival and AIM.org, we've been covering this, and devoting a lot of time and attention to it, there is a political push on to lift the ban on gay blood. And it's come from mostly the liberal Democrats in the U.S. Senate, led by Senator John Kerry and Senator Al Franken. And they are the ones who effectively pressured this FDA advisory panel into holding this recent hearing on blood safety and availability. And as I have indicated to you, we were there, and in the end, the committee voted 9-6 to retain the ban, but the John Kerry side did get 6 votes. It seems obvious, but we think it, you have to make the point that if they lift this ban in the same way that they repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, they are going to put more of our soldiers at risk. Now, aside from the obvious dangers I've laid out here of the fact that the prohibition is not 100% effective, that you cannot effectively screen out all of the HIV/AIDS anyway, there's another danger that Dale O'Leary writes about in our report of other emerging pathogens in the blood supply that we don't even know about now, that we have no way of detecting. And this gets back to a point I made yesterday about how AIDS developed. At the time, people didn't understand, why are all these gays dying? What's happening here? And it took a long time for the authorities to recognize the danger and then to put in place not only a method to identify the virus, but restrictions on blood donations. And meantime, as we all know, thousands and thousands and thousands of users of blood products who got blood transfusions, especially hemophiliacs, died. Thousands and thousands and thousands. Now here's where it gets more interesting. What's happening to our neighbor in the North, Canada, which has had a similar policy of prohibiting blood donations from gay males. In Canada, a ruling is expected soon in a court case involving a gay rights activist who lied about gay sex during 18 blood donations. He is claiming, and this is similar to what we're hearing down here, that the prohibition on gay blood is a violation of his rights to donate.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
In Canada, a ruling is expected soon in a court case involving a gay rights activist who lied about gay sex during 18 blood donations. He is claiming, and this is similar to what we're hearing down here, that the prohibition on gay blood is a violation of his rights to donate. He was sued on the ground that the rights of the recipients of blood products and transfusions take precedence. That may seem obvious to us that they should, but to him, like the gay activists demonstrating down here, as I say, it's all about them. It's all about their rights, not about ours. It's about their rights. And a ruling in this Canadian case is expected any day now. And when you have an administration like we have in power in Washington and judges, and I know Rena could probably talk more about this, but judges in the courts, including on the Supreme Court, who look to foreign law for advice or direction, if a decision comes down in Canada in favor of this gay activist, that he has a right to donate blood, that could influence the course of U.S. policy. This is really accelerating at a rapid rate, what's happening in Washington, D.C., and let me tell you why I think it's going on. And it gets back to my question earlier, how can you admit gay males to the military if they can't donate blood? And I think the liberals realize there's a contradiction or a dichotomy here. And so in conjunction or parallel with their plan to repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, they're moving to lift the ban on gay blood because it does present a quandary. How can you admit gay males to the military when they may be called upon to get or take or give a blood transfusion if they can't legally donate blood? So they're trying to do it at the same time. That's my theory of why they're doing it. And they've already, as I say, had some impact because they forced this FDA committee to hold these hearings. On June 10th and 11th, again, 9 to 6, as I point out, it's just a recommendation. It can be overruled. If the ban is lifted, it could potentially affect 5 million Americans a year who get blood transfusions. Now, some of these are, of course, regular users of blood products, such as those with hemophilia disorders or blood disorders. But, of course, it could also affect any one of us or our loved ones, members of our family who, say, are in a traffic accident and get injured and we have to go to the hospital and get a blood transfusion. My question here at the end, do you or your loved ones want to die in order to advance the gay rights agenda? Can I see a show of hands there? Now, I was at these hearings. We presented this testimony called Guarding Against Unknown and Emerging Pathogens, again, provided by Dale O'Leary. And it was very interesting to watch. We, as members of the public, were given 5 minutes to give a presentation. The Gay Men's Health Crisis was there as an organized special interest group. They were given a half hour. And this is essentially their argument. The blood screening procedures have virtually eliminated the risk. But you know, our research has determined, and I've confirmed this, speaking about the Chicago area, as recently as 2007, there were 4 cases of the HIV virus being transmitted to transplant recipients in this area. And I've communicated with one of the attorneys who's handling one of these cases. It's still in litigation. But this is not too long ago, 2007. And you know, they can argue all they want that, well, it virtually eliminates the risk. You know, how do you tell that to these 4 cases, these 4 individuals, these 4 human beings that, well, we virtually eliminated the risk? This is the title of our report that we presented to this federal committee. And this is also available at usasurvival.org, our website. Now, these are, I want to repeat some of these figures and go into a little bit more detail. These are, again, official figures. HIV diagnoses among MSM, men who have sex with men, 44 times higher than other men. the rate of syphilis 46 times that of other men. Outbreaks of various forms of hepatitis, herpes, gonorrhea, papillomavirus, cytomegalovirus, others in the homosexual gay male community. Now, it's not just Cliff Kincaid who's warning of these emerging pathogens. This is very, very interesting from a gay activist named Gabriel Rotello back in 1997. And I think it's important to read this and hear it. And this is from a gay activist. Almost every researcher studying the epidemic is convinced of one overarching fact, that if gay men ever recreate the sexual conditions of the 70s, he's talking about the conditions that gave rise to HIV/AIDS, the same kind of thing will happen again with other microbes. There are already drug-resistant or incurable diseases circulating in the gay population, and he goes through the whole list, and say the experts are probably many more microbes whose existence we know nothing about, just as we once knew nothing about HIV. That's the real, real danger. And I should reiterate a point I made yesterday, that we're not alone in this, in warning about these dangers. One thing that was extraordinary at this federal hearing was the great numbers of people and groups who were there opposing the gay rights agenda. Organized groups representing the hemophiliacs, other users of blood products, who were there and very, very tough and convincing in that the ban on gay male blood should remain in place. And they too warned about not only the danger of not catching all of the cases of HIV in the blood supply, but the dangers of these emerging pathogens. This is not just wild speculation or fantasy. This is a subject of much scientific scrutiny today, that something else is out there lurking in the blood supply. Dale O'Leary, the author of our report, makes this point, that since the beginning of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, the gay activists were fighting proven public health techniques to deal with it. You know, I mentioned that they fought against the reference to the disease being, quote, gay-related. They wanted to change the name, and they did, to AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. But they also opposed proven public health techniques in terms of isolating and trying to restrict the growth or transmission of the virus, such as by closing down the bathhouses, the notorious bathhouses in San Francisco. And Dale O'Leary makes this point, and I think it's a good one. She says, when the gay activists can prove that the rate of STDs and HIV infection among men who have sex with men is no higher than the rate in the general public, then and only then should you even consider changing the rules on blood donations. In other words, make them prove that they've cleaned up their act. Make them prove that their rate of disease is no higher than the general population. To give you some indication of how sensitive it is to talk about these matters, I wanted to briefly talk about this case of Jonathan Katz. He's a Washington University professor who specializes in ocean affairs. He was appointed to an Obama commission or panel dealing with the results of the Gulf oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. And what happened in this case, completely unrelated to his expertise in that area, the gay activists found that he had written an article on his personal website called In Defense of Homophobia. Interesting title. On the dangers of homosexual behavior. And they found out about this, the gay activists did, and forced him off the panel. They forced the Obama administration to dump him. Now, this fellow is pretty interesting. In his article, and it's available online, he touches on the gay blood problem, noting the homosexual activists have been campaigning for a lifting of the ban for several years. He says their position is that in order to satisfy their demand for full acceptance by society, the homosexual movement demands to kill some transfusion recipients by infecting them with AIDS. Now, that's blunt. That's really in your face. That's direct and to the point, but I submit it's true. They want to sacrifice, perhaps people in this audience, on the altar of their rights, because their rights are more important. Now, I won't go through all of this. In another part of the article, he talks about HIV/AIDS, how the gays resisted public health techniques to control that. Now, let me get to this, though. This is pretty interesting. I'm going to be talking about more of the Canadian situation tomorrow in my talk about the gay conservatives. But in Canada, the gays are very, very well organized, a very powerful lobby, so powerful that they actually submitted a complaint to the government of Canada alleging the violation of their rights. But it's interesting to look, I mean, we've heard that before, but it's interesting to look at the basis for their complaint. They claim they're not getting enough health care dollars to deal with their ailments and diseases. And here's what they say. This is in their own complaint. Gays and lesbians commit suicide at a rate from twice to 13.9 times higher than the general population, smoking rates 1.3 to 3 times higher, alcoholism 1.4 to 7 times higher, illegal drug use 1.8 to 19 times higher. The reason there's variances and discrepancies are talking about lesbians and gay men. They're given the rates, the variations in those rates for those categories. Depression 1.8 to 3 times higher. Now, their solution, of course, to all of this is more money from the Canadian government. They're demanding billions and billions of dollars in order to deal with these horrible health problems they have. They claim they're not getting enough health care dollars to deal with their ailments and diseases. And here's what they say. This is in their own complaint. Gays and lesbians commit suicide at a rate from twice to 13.9 times higher than the general population, smoking rates 1.3 to 3 times higher, alcoholism 1.4 to 7 times higher, illegal drug use 1.8 to 19 times higher. The reason there's variances and discrepancies are talking about lesbians and gay men. They're given the rates, the variations in those rates for those categories. Depression 1.8 to 3 times higher. Now, their solution, of course, to all of this is more money from the Canadian government. They're demanding billions and billions of dollars in order to deal with these horrible health problems they have. Now, it's not just in Canada that they're openly talking about this, but here in the United States, I attended this briefing. It was held on June 24th, not too long ago, in the Rayburn House office building. Very interesting. This was sponsored by Congressman Barney Frank, openly gay representative, and largely organized and arranged by his leading staffer on this issue, who also runs the Congressional LGBT Staff Caucus, and this person is the first transgendered congressional staffer, who put this on. But look, I don't want to go into it in a lot of detail. It was a very interesting event. But here is the subtitle, Reversing the Rising Incidence of HIV, STDs, and Viral Hepatitis Among Gay Men in the United States. What they're saying, what they're admitting, what they're complaining about is the fact that despite all the, quote, safe sex education, all of these dangerous behaviors and diseases are on the rise. So safe sex education so far has been a dismal failure. It hasn't worked, despite all the billions of dollars poured into that. And now, at the same time, while they had a number of speakers at this event who went into detail about these horrible diseases that are on the rise again, they blame all of this on you and me and American society. It's because of the discrimination that they suffer from and the homophobia that is driving them to these self-destructive behaviors. And that's how they explain it. So there's nothing wrong with the behavior itself or the lifestyle, so-called. It's because they're being oppressed and not accepted completely by American society. And this just repeats the point that it's all about them. It's all about their rights. And our point is, what about the rights of our servicemen and women? As Dale O'Leary points out in her well-documented report for us, these behaviors are not only still there, they're increasing, the risks are going up, they're continuing to engage in these dangerous practices. Thanks to Pete, we have photos like this of what happens out in the open on the streets of San Francisco. One question that Dale O'Leary asks is, if they repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, how are they going to deal with the personnel arrested off base for public sex? How are they going to deal with them? This is assuming the Pentagon's homosexual exclusion policy is repealed. And if you let them in as active and open homosexuals, well, they're going to practice that lifestyle openly, and they're going to go off base in some cases for their activities, for their extracurricular activities. What if they're arrested for public sex? What are the policies going to be? I mean, you can assume, well, they're going to get kicked out. Why? That's not necessarily a valid assumption. What about the transgendered? This is, you know, when you think about the repeal of the policy, you tend to think about, well, they're just going to let gays and lesbians in. But that's not what the LGBT community is all about completely. And Dale O'Leary in our reports asks, will this mean accommodating the transvestites? Now, this is not a joking matter. This is serious. What about those self-identified as genderqueers or the transgendered or the transsexual, the men who want to be or dress up as or act like women or vice versa? I mean, these are serious. How will the military deal with them? Now, if there's going to be no discrimination, how are they going to accept this kind of behavior? How are they going to do it? What kind of rules and regulations can you come up with to allow for that or to deal with it? Has anybody thought down the road about the implications of the repeal of the policy? She says, while we may have laughed at Sergeant Klinger, who tried to get, remember the MASH episodes? Tried to get out of the military by dressing in women's clothing. The fact is, the military is ill-equipped to deal with service personnel who want to appear publicly as the other sex. You see, it's not a joking matter. We can laugh at Corporal Klinger, and we can laugh at some of these pictures that I put up, courtesy of Pete LaBarbera, showing the transgendered at the Folsom Street Fair or in a gay pride parade, but if you're dealing with the military, this becomes a serious matter. How are you going to deal with this? Not to mention the blood problem. And she makes the point, if you repeal the policy, a person of male sex could claim discrimination on the basis of gender expression if the military refused to allow him to adopt a feminine gender identity and dress in women's uniforms. So you could face more claims of discrimination down the road by the men who want to dress like women. This is some of what's going on right now. Gay military dating, several websites catering to this kind of thing. This gets into the question of the, this gets a little graphic of the what's called barebacking, the unprotected anal intercourse with one partner or more who may be HIV positive. Very dangerous practice, obviously, but it's being openly promoted. There are gay websites devoted to it. Obviously, our conclusion, the risks of opening up the military to the LGBT queers or however they want to describe themselves, far outweigh the benefits. Again, I suggest you look at the report. Her 60-page report goes into a lot of detail about their behaviors, their practices, the STDs, the drugs, the alcohol, the use of Viagra in some of these settings. Right now, you may be aware of the fact that a repeal of the Pentagon's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy has passed the House of Representatives. It's passed the House of Representatives. It's currently in limbo in the United States Senate. We're not sure if it's going to pass the Senate. Senator McCain, to his credit, is fighting this with the support of all the military chiefs who do not want repeal now and who want to wait.
Thank you for listening. That was a talk by Cliff Kincaid about the federal ban on homosexual men giving blood given at the Americans for Truth Academy in August of 2010. You can order a DVD set of the entire three-day Truth Academy for just $89 through our website at americansfortruth.com. If you have, you can send an informational email at americansfortruth@gmail.com. We also have an audio set of our most recent Truth Academy in Columbus, Ohio. That's a 13-disc CD set, only in audio. That is available for the low price of $49. Again, available through our website at americansfortruth.com. Thanks for listening. You can send your inquiries to americansfortruth@gmail.com. Talk to you next week.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war, people who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.